March is here and the madness has officially begun. It's time for you to shoot your shot and score big on the nonstop action with MyBookie. Select the winners from 63 tournament games in the MyBookie Bracket Contest for a chance at $10,000 in cash prizes, and it's only a dollar to enter. That's $1. Doesn't matter whether you're filling out multiple brackets, betting the national championship winner, or simply looking for players and game props, MyBookie has you covered. Sign up today at mybookie.ag, use promo code 1012, T-E-N-1-2, to secure a deposit bonus up to $1,000. That's promo code 1012 to claim your first deposit bonus. College ball, NBA, and NHL. No matter the sport, no matter the minute, from tip-off to buzzer, MyBookie puts the action in your hands with in-game live betting. Bet anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie. So visit mybookie.ag today with promo code 1012. Welcome to the 10-12, the podcast that covers all 10 teams in the Big 12 Conference. I'm your host, Philip Slavin. Thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. Yeah, we're a day late. Blame the coronavirus, which has messed up the NCAA tournament schedule, which has left us recording when we have to record. I think we have a lot of raw emotion we want to get out of the way right here and early. We are recording this right after the end of the UConn-Baylor game, where a blatant and obvious no-call helps UConn get away with a 69-67 win over Baylor, knocking the Bears out of the women's tournament. And it was... Look, I get the spot of the game. Like, you don't want to affect the outcome, which for some reasons, like, the only time refs don't want to affect the outcome of the game is right in the closing seconds. Otherwise, they're happy to do so. But in this situation, I mean, it looked like an octopus's full eight arms all over. Just all up in her face.
Straight up elbow to the face.
And Carrington does not get the whistle, and UConn gets the win, and you can understand why Baylor and Mulkey were PO'd. That was, death taxes in UConn basketball, I guess.
Well, and I mean, it's so wild that it came down to that, because frankly, if Dede Richards doesn't get hurt, it doesn't come down to the wire. No question in my mind, Baylor absolutely pulls it out if she doesn't have to sit on the bench, because
let's be honest too, Mulkey kind of screwed the pooch there by not calling a timeout during that entire 19-0 run for UConn and then waiting until they break the run and then calling a timeout. Like, you have to stop that momentum. Yeah, maybe they still finish that 19-0 run, but it was pretty clear that Baylor was flustered, that they were trying to deal with what was going on. And you as a coach, that's the one thing that you can do to affect the way that momentum is, you know, playing out on the floor. So if Mulkey had called a timeout sometime in that big run, I think they probably could have stopped the bleeding a little earlier, and then it wouldn't have come down to that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm extremely anti-excuse. Like, yes, I 100% believe that they would have pulled it out with Dede, but that's not to say that that's the only way they would have pulled it out. They obviously made a comeback even after that 19-0 run and were able to bring the game down to the wire and just couldn't pull it out. And I 100% agree that's a situation you absolutely have to call a timeout, get everyone kind of refocused, and when your floor general, when the person who everyone turns to on the court is out, the coach kind of has to take that central point, and it's not ideal, but I mean, you're just so used to having Dede able to just basically get everyone figured out on the floor. And so that's a tough adjustment to have to make, but man, that was wild ending. And I mean, I really can't imagine having a game like that slip away because of a no call in the final seconds. I really wonder what that must feel.
Oh no, not at all.
Like,
poor Jamie.
Are you saying this brings back some dark memories, some bad feelings? Is that what you're implying?
It's an unhealed wound, man. I firmly believe that I could have been calling a game, whatever it is, tomorrow or tonight. I don't remember what the days lined up. I feel like I could still be working. Frankly, no, I would have been calling the game. I would have been in Texas. So, yeah, it's rough. It's just another installment in the saga of how unfortunate it is that the reffing situation across the country for like every league is really sad that it's become such a chore to find anyone who can do the job, that there's so many people who can get things so wrong. And that I'm not going to dwell on it beyond that, because I've spent way too much energy on it in the past like week already, but it's just so pervasive and it's really sad.
Yeah, look, the Big 12 refs Twitter account is there for a reason, because they kind of started the whole thing, but it's past time to have a more college refs account because it's bad all over the place. But the one thing that I actually heard from all of that, like, Jamie's the most pissed off about the fact that she did not get a trip down to Texas because of the refs, and it's all the refs.
The Big 12 ref Twitter account barely even tweets anymore, like, because it's gotten so bad they can't even make good. It's literally like they canceled Scandal because Trump in the White House was so ridiculously insane that they couldn't find a way to top it anymore. This is the same thing with the Big 12 ref Twitter account. It's like, we could make jokes, but I mean, literally, like, what do we, I don't, we can't top these. Like, reality has become wackier than fiction.
Right. It literally is just them retweeting people, tagging them for bad calls. I mean, that's literally all it is anymore. And it's great because it's true, but that's really all they have to do now is just retweet people that tag them.
We're going to talk refs a little bit more coming up, because charge calls, charge versus block, which seems to be something that no one knows how to do properly, is something we need to discuss on the show. Specifically, one of the things that I think is leading to the issue with charge calls, which is the overly aggressive fist pump, punch out signal that I think refs get way too much personal gratification and satisfaction from doing. So we're going to talk about that coming up a little bit, because I don't want to waste that fun bit. So there's a tease. I'm trying to tease things. You know, that's what good podcasters do, or so I'm told. Obviously, Andy, Jamie, Texas women still have a shot at the Final Four coming up Tuesday night against one seed South Carolina. So we'll keep a close eye on that. They've been on a nice run here in this tournament. We are recording this before the Baylor men play, because of course that game's the late game, and I'm sorry, it's Monday. This show is already going up a day late due to vacations and family and the tournament schedule being out of whack. So I'm not going to have us go at 10 o'clock just to get that game in. So I'm going to, let's do this. I can't wait for Old Takes Exposed. Let's go ahead and just get this out of the way now, because there's no reason to save for later. Baylor playing Arkansas tonight. I do think Arkansas is pretty good. My prediction for that game is that Baylor wins and makes the Final Four and continues their march toward the national championship game against Gonzaga. How are you guys feeling? Because, of course, tomorrow everyone, you know, Baylor's going to end up losing or something, and they'll be like, ha-ha, but whatever. How do you guys feel about Baylor tonight?
I got Baylor by a dozen.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about Baylor's abilities. I think they've looked pretty good during the tournament, so I don't really have any strong indication that it would be over after this one.
Yeah, I think Baylor's back to being Baylor, and the reason for that is, it sounds silly, them getting down at halftime against Villanova. They should not mean, you know, well, that doesn't mean they're back. No, because they had games in Big 12 play where they were down at half, or they were down. You know, they were losing to their opponent. And then as soon as Baylor's like, oh, pff, never mind, okay, we're great, and they flip that switch, it's done. Like, once they are fully locked in on the game, they're going to beat you. And that's exactly what they did. And to see Baylor be able to do that again, knowing that, hey, we got our scare, if you want to call it that, against Villanova in the Sweet 16, and then we turned it back on and just, you know, really thumped them in the second half. I feel very comfortable with Baylor the rest of the way until they face Gonzaga, and saying, even if Arkansas gives them a scare, even if with 54 seconds left, likely Houston gives them a scare, I think they're going to be okay. I think Baylor's going to be in the national championship game against likely Gonzaga.
Yeah, I mean, I've got Baylor winning it all. So my bracket in the pool really, really needs help, because while I am in 69th place right now, and I don't mind right now, I do not want to finish down in 69th place. So, Baylor, you have to win the tournament for
nice.
Me, please.
Nice, Andy.
my bracket's been done for so long, it's not even a consideration in my mind anymore.
Okay, so you guys are both the bracket pool. Who King Fitz 85 still leads it. Radomir 9 is in second, and our good friends Fifth Factor Plots is currently tied for second as well. So the member top three all get prizes. Now, what's most important at this point, if you're in the bracket pool, there's 70 people who are, and props to all of you who join us. It's not so much what your point total is now as it is paying attention to that max score, because you could be in a good spot and then your max score be terrible. For instance, fourth place is it's BMAC 5 with 57 points, but his max potential total is 89. He's not going to win, and there's a good chance other people will pass him. Our good friends at Lazy Fair Coffee tied for 5th currently. I am tied for 13th. Two of my final four teams are out. Andy, a certain AJ Mitz, is currently tied for 13th as well.
That's my daughter, so.
There you go. She can have, like, parental pride, you know, so that's good. That's a nice thing to have.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, given how she picked, given how she picked her bracket, I don't know that I can take any credit for it, but I mean, I'll
you
try
to right. That's all you can do. Jamie, you are down tied for 59th, and yes, Andy, second to bottom, tied for or at 69th. However, you are not in last place. In last place, he's gonna finish in last place because that max total is it's not good. I feel like Andy, you'll move on up. You won't finish in that nice position down there. Speaking of our bracket pool, if you're like me and you can't start your day without a cup of coffee, or two or three or four, make sure it's a good one. Start your day with a cup of Lazy Fair Coffee. Ethically sourced beans from around the world, roasted right in the heart of Big 12 country in DFW. Lazy Fair Coffee is the official sponsor of the 1012 Podcast Bracket Pool. Really appreciate them helping us out, and they have donated a few bags of their delicious coffee for our little our bracket challenge. You can still get a great deal on a great bag of beans for yourself. Go to lazyfaircoffee.com, LazyFair Coffee. Use the promo code 1012, TEN12, at checkout. Get 10% off of your order. There are 5 great bags to choose from: Cafe Cubano, Good Morning Vietnam, Tanzanian Delight, Cafe New Guinea, and the Honduran Sunrise. Whatever you like, whatever style of coffee, whatever flavor you like, you're going to find something for you here. So go to Lazy Fair, grab a bag, grab two, check out the other products that they have as well. Use the promo code 1012, get 10% off your order, and be enjoying a really good cup of coffee to start your morning right away. Thanks again to Lazy Fair Coffee, who's been kind of the sponsor for our bracket. Of course, a couple of bags of Lazy Fair Coffee will be included amongst our top three finishers and their prizes. Okay, enough tournament talk for now. We've got a lot to talk about with the coaching cycle in full spin in the Big 12. Let's kind of go in semi-chronological order here and go backwards first. We talk about Iowa State moving off of Steve Prohm. And they have officially tabbed the worst kept secret is who is going to take over there at Iowa State. TJ Otzelberger, former Iowa State assistant, former UNLV head coach. Weird, funny connection there we'll get to in just a second. Otzelberger now the head coach for Iowa State. He was very successful as an assistant during his run at Iowa State previous times. He's a guy who, you know, seems to know how to recruit pretty well. I wouldn't take too much away from his time at UNLV. He was really doing a rebuilding job there, to be honest, in his two seasons. And I would pay more attention to what he did in his three seasons at South Dakota State, where they went 8. He was a 70 and 33 combined, made the NCAA tournament twice, NIT once, finished first in the conference standings twice, won the tournament twice for the Summit League. I think he had a lot of success there. UNLV was a bigger rebuilding job, people want to admit. So, you know, he only had two seasons there. I'll be curious to see how that affects his rebuild job that's now to come at Iowa State, because that's exactly what it is. This team wasn't as bad as they were, if that's fair. And Jamie, I think you could probably speak to this a little bit more than me. I don't think the roster is as bad as the team made it look, I think is my overall point. So it's not too surprising to see Prohm gone, especially after a winless season in Big 12 play. I'm curious. I know you have to be delicate in what you say here as a as an employee of Iowa State, but just any thoughts you have on prom or the hiring of Otzelberger?
Well, I mean, the biggest benefit for, as far as I'm concerned, of hiring TJ is that his wife is one of the best players to ever play for ISU women's basketball. So Allison Lacey, now Otzelberger. She also happens to be my mother's like best friend. So we are thrilled to have Allison back in town, thrilled to have TJ back in town. Love that family to death. They love Iowa State. And so I think that Steve Prohm really, he wanted them to be good. It's not any like lack of care on his part. It just didn't work out. And that's unfortunate. But I think that the general consensus among Iowa State fans is, you know, we truly believe he's a good guy. We know that. Like, it's very apparent. And so we want him to be really successful wherever he lands. And unfortunately, that just wasn't going to be long-term at Iowa State. But to be able to move on pretty quickly and get things rolling, I think was a huge benefit. Anyone familiar with like the rumor mill kind of knew even before everything started actually being announced what was coming. Whether that was going to be accurate or not, the rumor always was that it would be TJ. And so I'm sure that there was more that went into it, but no one was ultimately surprised. But to have him come to town, just he loves Iowa State. Allison loves Iowa State. I'm sure that their young children will very quickly learn to love it as well. But I'm really excited about the staff he's putting together. I love that he retained Micah Byers and Danielle Robinson, a couple guys who have been there for a long time. Really just their staff works so hard that the players all love them. So retaining them, I don't think not retaining them was ever really an option just because of how great of a name they've made for themselves. And then snagging Green from UNI, unfortunately not getting the players with him, but just the staff that he's pulling together looks really good. Already getting a transfer commit. And obviously when you have a coaching change, when you have the kind of year that we had, you're going to see some players entering the transfer portal, but, obviously wish nothing but the best to those guys heading out. But I really look forward to the additions that will inevitably start being announced here pretty quick. I'm really excited. I'm optimistic. It can't get a whole lot worse than a 2-win season. But I'm just really excited to see what happens. He plays a fun style of basketball. So it'll be a really good time. I'm excited.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I have a lot of thoughts about, you know, how well this is going to work out. The only thing that really kind of struck me was one, how quick they went ahead and hired him. It was pretty clear that there was two things going on. One, they were just ready to kind of move on and try to start building some, you know, momentum, try to start building some excitement around the program again. And two, it kind of tells me that they didn't really necessarily think it was super important to make sure that they got the best guy, just someone that they could go ahead and sell to the fan base to go ahead and get. I mean, and don't get me wrong. I'm not saying he's not ultimately the best guy for the job, but the fact that you hired him basically less than a day after you got rid of Prohm, or Prohm decided to leave, however you want to spin that. Like, this was more about stabilizing the program and getting people excited and, you know, paying attention to the program, knowing full well that the football side of it has kind of stabilized everything for everybody across the entire athletic program. I mean, so it's one of those things, like, we could potentially look back, if this doesn't work out, you could look back and say, well, maybe they should have hired someone else, or maybe they should have taken more time to try to find the best person. But I don't even know that that was the main concern at this point. It was about, you know, you had a bunch of people that were turned off by the program, especially the last couple of years here. And so it was about getting someone that people were familiar with, getting someone that people were comfortable with, getting someone in there that people could get excited about, you know, even if we still don't really know what to expect from him. And so, like, it sounds like it worked just fine, because I know, Jamie, you have a personal connection to him. But, I mean, I've heard a lot of kind of similar thoughts from the Iowa State fans that I know, that they love the fact that a guy like this is coming back into the program. But some of the people that, you know, do follow the program a little bit more and were kind of maybe potentially concerned about them jumping into it, wonder if it's going to work out. They all want it to work out. But, you know, this is kind of one of those, I could see it going either way. It's either going to work out really well and they're going to be good enough that everyone's going to be happy. Or they could have jumped the gun and gone a little too quickly and gotten a guy that made everybody feel good, but didn't necessarily get the program turned around. So give it, you know, you have to give it at least 2-3 years anyway, just to kind of see what he's able to do, especially given, you know, what happened at his last job. Kind of like what you were talking about there, Philip, not giving him an opportunity there at UNLV to really rebuild it before he decided to come back here. So you have to give him time to try to rebuild it. The question is going to be how quickly, you know, do the fans and how quickly do the people in the administration need him to get this turned around before people start wondering what's going on?
Yeah, look, South Dakota State was humming before he got there, so he continued that success. And I do think that people, I think, downplay that too often. So I do think that matters. I do think that is a positive thing. And again, he spent 2 years at UNLV. It wasn't a bad spot when he took over. It was a rebuild job, and Iowa State's going to be a rebuild job. Though I think it should be easier to rebuild at a Power 5 school than even a program with the history of UNLV, because it will be easier to attract talent. And the guys you're retaining, good assistant coaches, good recruiters, Otzelberger, good recruiter. So I do think that's going to be something where if he can do this, he should be able to do so within a 2, at most 3-year period. I think by year 3, we'll have a pretty good idea if this is going to work or not. That would be my opinion. I think it takes longer to rebuild in football than basketball, because football has so many more players than basketball. By year 3, if it's not working, it's not going to work. One thing I will note, as you mentioned, Jamie, assistant coach Kyle Green, the newest addition to the staff coming over from UNI, or from Northern Iowa. His son, by the way, I'm just gonna put this out there. His son, AJ Green, played for his father's team at Northern Iowa. Was averaging 22.3 points per game when he suffered a season-ending injury.
Already said he's staying at UNI.
Really?
Yeah.
But it made so much sense.
He's got two sons on the team. They both said they're staying.
Oh, okay.
I know.
We'll see.
We were all hoping for it.
We'll see. It's early.
Hopes are dashed.
Yeah, well. Okay. So I think, I know everyone wants you to judge hires. Yep, let's judge it. Let's see what it is. I think this really is just a TBD. Like, I think it has potential to work. I think keeping the two assistants that have been there for a while should help. So we'll just see. I think it was such an obvious hire that I think it was a solid hire for them. You know, so if you get South Dakota State, Otzelberger, then you should feel pretty good. You should feel pretty good, I think. So that's good for Iowa State. You know what else is really good for Iowa State? Home field apparel. I can't believe none of you guys guessed this. I you guys just sit there quietly while I'm like,
I thought that's where you were going, but I didn't want to interrupt your mojo.
Let me throw you a layup here. We're talking basketball.
Marching Psy is fantastic.
Marching Psy is fantastic. It's not the only fantastic.
I'm wearing my Doggers right now and continuing to put energy out into the universe for Cyclo Joggers.
Oh, yeah. So. Oh, yeah. Did they add more shirts? Iowa State Shield
They're
women's?
They're always adding more
shirts. What was for ISU? I don't remember the Shield women's t-shirt. That's not bad.
No, they added a whole bunch of women's basketball shirts in the last, like, 2 days.
Ooh. There's a retro women's tank.
Because they tweeted out the Indiana one, which is really, really good looking as well. I mean, they've got, the Iowa State ones now. So, yeah, they've got quite a few.
This Shield
just another reason to
nice.
Go look it out.
This retro tank is nice. This vintage ISU t-shirt is nice. Okay, I'm going to stop. This is going to start turning into an office rip. Guys, the Iowa State selection is now 16 shirts deep, and it is fantastic. So if you haven't been to home field yet, check out the Iowa State shirts, the Baylor shirts, the Texas Tech shirts, home field apparel with the most comfortable t-shirts, sweaters, hoodies, joggers, or doggers. Wait, you didn't wear doggers, did you?
I'm wearing my doggers right
you,
now.
You wore the Yukon.
That's all they have so far.
Doggers. Tonight of all nights. When UConn was playing Baylor.
Uh-oh. It's Jamie's fault.
I guess I didn't think about it. If I had...
You still would have worn them. They're pretty comfortable.
I don't know that I would have done anything.
They're stinking comfortable. Exactly. They're stinking comfortable. Look, there's more Baylor gear.
It's home field's fault for only having doggers right now. They keep saying they're going to get more of the joggers for different schools, but all they have so far is the doggers. So really,
If your school has home field gear and you're not allowing them to put your logo on joggers, shame on you. Shame, seriously. Shame. Baylor had some new stuff,
too. I would think it's more about they didn't have the amount of pants.
No. It's never home field's fault. Remember, they're the good brand.
They are the good brand. Okay, they're good. They added some more Baylor stuff as well. There's some vintage, some women's tees as well. The men's basketball shirt in 2020, that's there. I think they had a 2021 one. I think they did. The vintage bear. Oh, the Baylor gear is good. The Texas Tech gear is good. There are more than 100 schools with amazing t-shirts, hoodies, sweaters from Home Field Apparel. So go to Home Field Apparel now, homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code 1012. Get 20% off your first order. All orders of $70 or more get free shipping. That's a perfect combo. Baylor, Iowa State, Texas Tech, like we mentioned. Do you want to know some of the other schools that they have? They also have Slippery Rock, Evansville, Ferris State, Hampton, Michigan, Radford, Xavier, Davidson,
Delaware.
So good. That blue hen. The Tulane Green Wave, folks. If you just like college sports logos, the Pelican from Tulane is awesome.
Surf and Green burn. Wave.
Does anybody have a combination? Like, there's not many places that have two like mascots, and I don't think there's anyone who has two logo mascots that are as good as Tulane's. Between the Pelican and the Green Wave, and I don't care. I would bring Tulane into the Big 12 just for that. Just for that alone. End of the story. All right. Home Field Apparel.
It's worth it.
10-12. 20% off your first order. Be rocking some amazing, comfortable, vintage college sports apparel today. All right. Do we want to go OU or Texas next? I think we should save Texas for the end, because I feel like this is going to have the most to talk about. So let's talk about Oklahoma. Lon Kruger, after 10 years in Norman, has announced that he is retired. The interesting connection being that his son, now the head coach at UNLV, the job that Otzelberger just left. And so Kruger is going to move to Vegas to be close to his son and his grandkids. If Otzelberger hadn't been hired, would Lon Kruger still be the head coach at Oklahoma? Who knows? We'll never know. But it's an interesting thought. But here's where we are. So Lon Kruger is gone after a pretty solid 10-year run at Oklahoma. Made the tournament 7 of 10 years. Would have been 8 if 10 had they held a tournament last season. Made a Final Four in 2016, a Sweet 16 in 2015. Every story about him has been no one has a bad word to say about Lon Kruger. Like, no one has. I think I saw a story where it was like, literally, through every practice he's ever had, he never used a curse word, which is, I think, kind of insane to hear from a college coach of any sport that he never dropped a curse word at all. Boy Scout level? This is crazy. You can't find a bad word to say about Lon Kruger. If you want to find something just because he beat your team, whatever, be petty, that's fine. But really, like, OU got 10 fantastic seasons from him, and now he's gone off in retirement, and props to him. I hope he enjoys the time with his family. You know, I'm always impressed by guys who are able to go and do that. I think some guys just coach until they die. But for him to have had the success he had at Kansas State, Florida, Illinois, UNLV, Oklahoma, and a little bit of time in the NBA, props to him, and congratulations on a great career.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm an Oklahoma basketball fan, I'm in some deep mourning right now, because you've had just like the jackpot of coaching duos for a while, and as far as men's and women's sides go. And man, those retirements gotta hit you like a bus. Like, that's, you talk about never having a bad word to say about someone. I mean, Cherry Cole's like, as great as you can get as far as on the women's side too. And I mean, Lon Kruger, I've obviously never heard a bad word about him either. I've watched him coach a whole heck of a lot of games and just measured and very aware and obviously an incredible coach. So gosh, I mean, for both of them to go in the same year, that's big shoes to fill, to be sure.
Yeah, I mean, what you were saying, you know, both coaches on the men and the women's side, both retiring within just a couple days of each other, which, I mean, it's got to be a gut punch for those, you know, that really follow and were hoping to build on the years that both of those, you know, schools had. I mean, Oklahoma women were making a run at the end of the season and really kind of coming on strong. You thought maybe they were building some momentum to go into next year, you know, and then the men, like, yeah, they didn't play as well as they wanted to down the stretch, but Lon Kruger has done a lot at that Oklahoma school there, you know, being a 2 seed in the 2016 tournament, making it all the way to the Final Four. You know, I mean, he has done a lot for that program, you know, especially after kind of what they had to deal with, you know, with Capel coming off of the Kelvin Sampson scandal issues that he had there. So, you know, he's done, I think, a lot to stabilize the Oklahoma program and put them in a good position. And, you know, I'm going to be kind of honest. Like, you were talking about Texas, and there's a big argument about which job is the better job and, you know, is the more attractive job. And I think there's a really strong argument to make that what Lon Kruger has turned this Oklahoma program into, that they are probably the more intriguing program, probably the more stable program moving forward for a head coach that's looking to get into the Big 12.
I mean, it's a tricky spot to have to hire your men's and women's basketball coaches in the same offseason.
Definitely.
And maybe I'm wrong here, but I feel like, and Lon Kruger did a really good job at Oklahoma. There's no arguing that whatsoever. I think Sherry Cole has bigger shoes to fill. It's going to be a harder one to replace, even though the end of her tenure wasn't quite as good as it had been earlier on. I still think that's going to be a more difficult hire. You know, Texas just went out and was like, all right, we'll just get South Carolina's head coach. Done. And it's paying off so far. I'm not sure that Texas has ungodly amounts of money. And it's not that OU's sitting there in the little house for the poor, but I'm not sure they can just go out and hire Stanford's coach, you know, or someone of that ilk or that level in the sport. So it's going to be tougher, I think, for the women's side to replace Sherry Cole than it is for the men's side to replace Lon Kruger. And that's not a slight at Lon Kruger in any way, shape, or form. But I do think that is going to be a trickier spot to be in, and both matter. This isn't a situation where, like, we got to hire the men's coach and we'll get a women's coach. This, both positions matter a lot to OU. This is a fan base that cares about their women's team. They, and look, Castiglione has done a heck of a job with every coach he's hired across every sport, period. But it is a tricky spot to be in to have to hire both in the same offseason. And I do think it makes it harder to be able to get either one done quickly here in the next like week or so. Because I haven't heard rumors or rumblings about either one as to who could be. Like, I know, and we'll talk Turgeon from Maryland, and that sounds more like Mark Turgeon's PR people trying to push him for this job to help him
it
out.
It is.
It's very – always be aware of, like, where's the information coming from. This feels like a Turgeon PR move with him to Oklahoma more than it actually feels like Turgeon's going to end up the head coach at Oklahoma.
It's a lot of the same people that anytime, like, it comes up, like, who's going to, you know, succeed Bill Self at Kansas – Turgeon is like the one that gets pushed the most. And I think it's a lot of the same people talking about him and going to Oklahoma now. So
it's either Turgeon's people or Maryland people like, go ahead.
Yeah, probably please, the Maryland people wanting please, to push him out.
Go ahead. But that's like, look, people, there is a rule when it comes to coaching hires or information. Information only gets out because somebody wants to get it out. So always look for who it's most beneficial to. It's not most beneficial to Oklahoma to have Turgeon's name out there. Okay, it's like people talking about the high school coach who never punts going to become the head coach at Kansas. That's because whoever
not
the head coach
happen.
Of the high school team that never punts has a really good PR machine, which apparently The Athletic is a part of. Anyways, I think the women's coach is going to be harder to replace than the men's coach. That's not a slight at Lon Kruger. I just think it's going to be tougher.
Well, and I like hold on to most of this conversation until the tournament's done, but you no longer have the option to not put a lot of focus on your women's teams because the analytical evidence that it is growing is too much to ignore at this point. And it deserves more time than we can give it today. And it'll be a lot more evident once we get like the final numbers and stuff from the tournament. So I'm not going to get too far into it. But for Oklahoma, who thanks to Sherry Cole has built a good fan base for their women's team and has a decent basis to go off of, they've got some incredible returning players that they need to hold on to by making a good hire. You do not have the luxury of saying, we're going to go all in on this men's coach. And if the women's coach doesn't do well, we'll figure it out eventually, because this very genuinely is a turning point where it's just growing at such a rate that you can't afford not to capitalize off of it right
now. And look, the only place where that is even mildly acceptable is places where the men's team is a blue blood of the sport and the women's team has not been. And even then, like even at a place like Kansas, like the athletic directors, the last three athletic directors have all felt pressure because the women's team has struggled mightily. And I mean, yes, men's basketball is what drives the bus at Kansas, but there are a lot of people that want that women's basketball team to do really well. They really want it to improve. And so it's one of those things, like the next time Kansas hires a women's basketball coach, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be followed fairly closely. It's going to be one of those things where it will actually matter in terms of like looking at the, you know, the record of that athletic director. One other thing, Philip, back to your point about the athletic being part of that high school coach's, you know, PR department. There's only one thing that is stronger than PR departments of coaches that want to move up, and it is national writers finding some weird off the wall story that they can write about that they think is the most novel thing in the world that everybody else has already written about.
Okay. As for Oklahoma, forget Turgeon. We're going to set it aside. I would be shocked if that happens. I've seen a few lists of names. It's been pretty quiet as far as who really is up for this job. If I was going to put a list together, Grant McCaslin at North Texas, I think he's done a really good job there. I think he is a, I think he is a, should be a candidate and should be someone that they look at, especially, you know, this guy's done well in Texas. He had a year at Arkansas State. He understands the area, how to recruit in it and how to coach here. So I think that one's the one to keep an eye on. You know, Houston is now in the Final Four. You're obviously not going to get Kelvin Sampson back, but you might look at his assistant coaches. You know, it's. I know it sounds crazy for Oklahoma to hire an assistant coach to become their head coach. They've done it in football. The last two head coaches who've been very successful did not have head coaching experience before they took over. So it's not the craziest idea to hire a men's basketball coach who is currently an assistant and see if they have success. Getting a guy from Kelvin Sampson's staff, Kelvin Sampson, who, as I recall, was pretty darn good when he was at Oklahoma, if I recall correctly. Was an AP Coach of the Year, won the Henry Ipa Award, had a few trips to, you know, a few deep runs in the NCAA tournament. Not a crazy idea, I would say. I believe, I'm going to mispronounce, it's Quanis White, I think. He's an OU alum. Makes a lot of sense. You guys have any thoughts on the men's side as to who to keep an eye on?
I can't even begin. That's so far out of my wheelhouse.
Okay, Jamie, then let me ask you about the women, because I have no idea on the women's side. Like, I don't have a clue as to where
that one. That one isn't because I have no like women's basketball knowledge. That's because I just don't even know where you begin to look. Like, it's gonna be you. It's like you said, like, you're not Texas that can just go pull Vic Schaefer from Mississippi State. Like, you've got to find someone who's a little bit maybe lower profile. Like, frankly, it's about who you can get there, because as far as like mid-major people who are gonna be getting a lot of looks to go to like a Power Five school, you look at like, gosh, I could never pronounce their name, Berenzecker, however you pronounce it, from Drake, just down the road from where I am. Their program's been terrific for years, and any Power Five school opening that's at like a middling level would have to look at her. But I don't think that she wants to leave Drake because they've like endowed her position and she's in a great position there, but you've got to find someone similar where they've got maybe a tie to Oklahoma or something like that, and they're going to want to get that little bit of a boost by going there. But I frankly don't even have a short list. I might have to start lurking some OU message boards because I'm extremely curious about where they go.
I'm not going to pronounce her name correctly. She is the coach at Missouri State. Now, she's only been at Missouri State for 2 years, but she's 49-7, 32-2 in conference play, Sweet 16 this year. Didn't go to the tournament last year because, of course, it was canceled, but you expected they would have had a nice run. Again, she's only been the head coach for 2 years, but if you wanted an up-and-comer who has been an assistant at VCU, Indiana, Old Dominion, Michigan State, that doesn't seem like a bad one to at least bring in for an interview.
No, I mean, she's young. I think that her team seemed to really like her. I think that's another great starting point because it kind of ticks all the boxes of she has some head coaching experience, but not so much that she's going to be looking for way bigger and better things. So that's a really interesting idea.
Thank you. I feel Jamie approves. This is good. Okay. Let's talk Texas. Let's just do this. Shaka Smart is out.
Just rip off the Band-Aid.
Shaka Smart is now the head coach at Marquette. He's a guy that now the head coach at Marquette. In what feels more like, anyone trying to make it like, oh, Texas lost their head coach at Marquette. No, Texas helped find Shaka Smart a new job so that they wouldn't have to pay his buyout when they fired him and save a lot of money to help hire whoever the next person is, especially if that person they're trying to go after has a very large buyout. And we'll get to that in just a second. So Shaka Smart is gone. Texas had a pretty nice season, 19-8 overall, 12-6 in conference play, finished third in the conference. They won a Big 12 tournament title, but they lost in a just disgustingly ugly first-round game in the NCAA tournament. He did not win an NCAA tournament game at Texas, and their three trips there, obviously they would have gone last season, if not for the pandemic, of course. They won the NIT while he was at Texas. He was the hot seat coming in. I don't think he had a bad season, but I think, I mean, you look at him compared to Rick Barnes. What they fired Barnes for, Barnes had done more and got fired than what Shaka had done in the last five seasons. I think if they had won an NCAA tournament game, I'm really curious if he's still there. But them losing that first round game just a week after winning the Big 12 tournament, the first Big 12 tournament Texas has ever won, that upset was... It wasn't like that, you know, Abilene Christian was just having an ORU-like moment where they were just playing amazing. Abilene Christian played like dirt, and Texas blew that game. I'm both not surprised that he's gone and kind of surprised he's gone.
Yeah, I mean, if he was going to be gone, that was the way it was going to have to happen because I don't think Texas had the stomach to fire him at this point. One, because, you know, they did win the Big 12 tournament. You know, as much as you might be able to say that they underachieved over the course of the entire season with that big swoon that they had in the, you know, towards the end of the conference season. You know, they actually did get some postseason success, not the kind that they really wanted. I mean, I actually almost think that they would have rather played Kansas and lost to Kansas in the Big 12 tournament and then made it to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. Like if you could make that trade, they definitely would have made that trade and everybody would have been happy. But you know, it's one of those things. I was happy when Shaka won it after Kansas got knocked out because of COVID, because it meant that Shaka was probably going to be sticking around for at least another season or two, because Shaka and Texas just never clicked the way that you expected them to. He had enough talent that he should have been doing what Baylor is doing now. Like the way that he recruited to Texas and the way that he was able to do, you know, get the guys into Texas. If he had the kind of coaching ability that everybody fell in love with at VCU, then he should have been able to turn that team into at least one Final Four in his time at Texas there. Just because he had so much talent, especially down low, when, you know, down low big men were kind of dominating the college game, and he wasn't able to do anything with it. And so it's one of those things, like, I'm not saying that Shaka's a bad coach. I'm just saying his coaching style did not fit well with the style of recruits that he was able to get at Texas. It was just a mismatch. And so him going to Marquette is probably going to be a really good thing for his career, because he's going to be able to go to a place that likes to play the style of basketball that made him super successful at VCU. He's going to have an opportunity, I think, there to actually have some NCAA tournament success and do what he needs to do. And the areas that he's going to be pulling from in terms of recruits are going to, I think, fit that style of basketball a whole lot better than what he was able to do. And so, like, that's the big thing for Texas. It's not that they need to throw a whole bunch of money at the position. They need to find someone who can recruit the type of guys that they can get at Texas and actually create a cohesive system around them, because that's the only thing holding Texas back. Texas, I think, has more resources than almost every other team in the Big 12. If they can find a coach that can actually use those resources the way that they need to be used, then Texas could actually be a very good Big 12 team for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for being able to read the writing on the wall. And I don't think that, like I said, just it wasn't a good fit. And so, you know, Big 12 championship title aside, if you've got connections to Marquette, if you have any desire where you think, hey, you know, I think this might be a good fit, I think this might be a better fit, there's no reason really to try and stick it out. Like, it's not like it's after one's, it, like, say that it's your first season and it's a COVID year and it goes poorly. Obviously, that's not like a reason to jump ship, but you kind of had time to evaluate and say, is this going to work out? Is this not? And whatever the result this year, as far as the Big 12 tournament goes, I think that it was just fairly evident that it just wasn't, they just didn't mesh, like you said, Andy. And so to go and make the move when it's quote unquote voluntary, whatever the realistic, like whatever the actual behind the scenes of that was, you get to go and go somewhere that you have connections to and you like, as opposed to lasting another year or two, not making a huge jump, presumably, and then being kind of unceremoniously dumped and then being in a much tougher position.
Yeah. The one thing I will say in Shaka's defense, I think he is one of the coaches and Texas is one of the teams that honestly got screwed the most last year with the tournament being canceled, because that team was on a roll. They were really, really, really strong and had a lot of momentum going into the NCAA tournament. I don't know how far they would have gotten, but I easily could have seen that team getting to the second weekend. And if that happens in last year's tournament, then I think all the narratives coming into this year are completely different. And like what he did this year probably actually wouldn't have put him on the hot seat. Like, he wouldn't have been on the hot seat coming into the year because they probably would have had some good tournament success last year. And, you know, what he did this year, winning the Big 12 tournament, it would have been easier to write off, you know, the loss to Abilene Christian as just one of those weird things to happen in a COVID year. But because we hadn't seen him have any success, and his probably best opportunity to have success just magically disappeared with the tournament being canceled, it didn't give him that opportunity, you know, to find that anchor point that he needed in NCAA tournament success to make it so that Texas alums or the people close to the program would have been willing to fight for him to keep him there.
Yeah, I think your point, Andy. All I've heard throughout his time at Texas was that Shaka was never able to play the style that made him successful at VCU, at Texas, with the guys they recruited. He didn't. For whatever reason, whether they didn't want him to, whether it didn't fit his players, whether he just decided to change, I don't know. But he never did. It just never felt like a good fit. I'm not saying Shaka's a bad coach. I think he'll go to Marquette and have success. I do. Just like I think he had a success at VCU. I think he will have success at Marquette. I think it was a bad fit at Texas. By the way, there's this thing called the Big 12 Big East Alliance that happens every year where the Big 12 10 teams face off against the 10 teams in the Big East. And
how much you want to bet Marquette and Texas are playing really soon here?
I don't know that it would happen this year. That feels like it would be a little bit mean-spirited.
Two on the nose.
But 2 years from now, 3 years from now, mark it down. Just put it – I mean –
Or two and 3 years from now.
As an occasional masochist, yes, I would love to see that this year. But I feel like that might be a little bit mean. Okay, so for speculation as to who's going to be the next head coach at Texas. So why would Texas be so happy to not have to pay Shaka Smart's buyout? Well, it just so happens that the buyout currently for the guy that another head coach who's had some success at another team in Texas, and a guy who has a connection to Texas, just so apparently, his buyout is currently $5 million. Now that drops to $4 million on April 1st, which is just here in a couple days. And that Texas might be probably, as everyone keeps pointing, is a similar world's worst kept secret. Texas might be aggressively pursuing said head coach at a said school from the Big 12 in the state of Texas. And I was talking to our good friend Brian Ralph, who comes on the show, and I equated Texas's aspirations for grabbing Chris Beard to those of Texas when they were going after Urban Meyer. Now, I think these are a little bit more realistic than the Urban stuff was, but it also was like, it's this presumed done deal. You've seen tweets, people, it's done. Contract is signed. It's finished. You're just not going to do anything, obviously, until April 1st, so you only pay $4 million instead of $5 million. And I'm just not sure I buy it. I'm not saying he's not going to be there, and I'm happy to be old takes exposed if Chris Beard on April 1st has announced the head coach of the University of Texas men's basketball program. I'm just not sure I buy it. I don't buy the connection as much.
Pretty sure that they're going to wait till April 2nd, because if they tried to announce it on April 1st, no one would believe them.
Wow. This morning at midnight, 01, we got it done. I think the connections are overplayed. I do. A lot. And I think that's where everybody keeps landing. Oh, he was an assistant under Tom Penders. Okay, he's long been connected to the job. Whatever. Chris Beard wants to continue on his rise in college basketball. He wants to be – he is a fantastic coach. He wants to be at the cream of the crop jobs. He does. I know Tech fans think he loves Lubbock, and he probably does. But I also think Tech fans' belief that he's just in love with Lubbock and will never leave is a little bit – overdone. And the conversation I had with Brian was this. He is a man with aspirations of climbing the ladder. If you go to Texas, you're not going to Texas for a few years and then jumping again. You're going to be at Texas. They're going to pay you to be there. Texas is not a blue blood program in men's basketball. It's not. Texas fans aren't going to want to hear that. They have blue blood money. They have elite money. But when you list elite men's basketball programs, Texas is not one of them. Their fan base doesn't care about basketball like they do football and other sports. They just don't. That's just the reality. Then you're going to die. We love basketball. Yes, you do. And yes, you're building new facilities and a new basketball arena and all this stuff. But when you think of men's basketball, those are not the jobs. Texas is not one of the jobs you think of. Some of the jobs you do happen to think of are very likely to be coming open in the next 2 to 5 years. North Carolina. Duke. I think Kentucky's another 5 to 10 years away. Those kinds of jobs are going to come open. And if Chris Beard is having the level of success he is having at Texas Tech right now, he's going to be in contention for those jobs. I would position this. I don't know what Chris Beard is thinking. Maybe he does want the Texas job. Maybe his alma mater is the job he's always wanted. Or maybe he's perfectly fine getting paid large amounts of money at Texas Tech and having success at Texas Tech and waiting for one of the cream of the crop, blue blood, elite jobs in men's college basketball to open up and trying to go for one of those. And at worst, Texas is probably going to always be a fallback plan unless they just knock this next hire out of the park.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that Chris Beard has done is turn Texas Tech into a recruiting destination. Like, the fact that he's able to get very good players to come out to Texas Tech.
Let me counter that. He can do it for 1 year. He's yet to get guys who are going to come and stay for more than one that are upper level players, would be my argument.
I mean, yeah, he's built that program with transfers, but it's also kind of one of those things now where the high level guys, you know, the 4 and 5 star guys are actually considering Texas Tech, even if they don't come, you know, and stay there for a really long time before. Like if one of them, or if you tried to say that Texas Tech was on the list of any of the elite recruits, you'd get laughed. Like they would laugh in your face because there's nobody even considered it as a possibility. And yes, he built the program using transfers. You know, he did all that stuff, but that run to the national championship game did a whole lot and really put him on the map. He is talked about as one of, you know, the up and coming guys, one of the guys that a lot of people are looking at for those bigger jobs. And the only way to continue that momentum, kind of what you were saying, is there's no way you continue that momentum at Texas. I mean, look at what Rick Barnes did at Texas and the way that he got run out of town when the football program happened to have a little bit of success at the same time that he lost early in the NCAA tournament a few times. Like, it's one of those things where if football's going right at all, it doesn't matter what you do in basketball at Texas. Nobody cares. If you're not winning championships, like conference championships, not consistently making it to the second week of the tournament, then half the time people don't even know that the program exists, especially the big money donors. And so you are never going to be able to build the type of program that you want and get the accolades that you want and be, you know, seen as one of the better coaches in the country at a place like Texas, unless you are winning 3 or 4 national titles in a 7 or 8 year period. Like, you have to have that level of success for people to think about your program over Texas football. And so unless Chris Beard wants to, you know, build a program and have very consistent success in the shadow of a football program that has been really, you know, up and down all over the place, I don't see him making the jump to Texas. You know, him being a Texas alum, I think he knows that better than anybody. Like, he knows how fickle the fan base can be. You know, he knows just how bad it can get if you're not successful at Texas. And even when you are successful, you're not going to get the kind of credit that you can get at other places, you know, especially a place like Texas Tech right now. He is the big man on campus there at Texas Tech. He is the face of that Texas Tech basketball program. You know, they are probably the most consistent and the best program athletically on the campus right now. And so to move over to Texas, like, to give all that up to go over to Texas at this point, you know, especially if you have aspirations of a much bigger job. You know, I mean, I've heard people talking about him as a possibility of, you know, like, if something happens with Bill Self and they're looking for someone, that Kansas might look into trying to get Chris Beard over there. You know, there's a bunch of different options. He's being talked about in a lot of those bigger jobs. And I think all that goes away if he goes over to Texas, because like you said, it's going to be a more long-term type of thing. And I don't think he's gonna be able to reach the level of success and be on, you know, the front of people's minds when they're looking for replacement coaches if he goes to a place like Texas where everything he does is overshadowed by a mediocre football program.
Yeah, I mean, it's not a tempting job at the moment. Just if you're going to have better things down the pipe, it's a lot to sign up for. The risk reward ratio, I don't know. I mean, the reward is quite a bit of money, but the risk is a lot to potentially contend with, is my 2 cents, because I feel like y'all have covered it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it really comes down to, after Texas, your next job is most likely going to be a step down. You'll get a whole bunch of money while you're at Texas, but your next job after Texas is probably going to be a step down instead of a step up.
I don't know. One could argue Marquette's not that big a step down, and Tennessee wasn't a big step down for Barnes, but it's not that Texas doesn't have basketball fans, but it's never going to be king. And if you want to climb the ladder in men's basketball, you go somewhere where basketball is king. Kansas, Kentucky, Duke, North Carolina, hell, Indiana, which made a weird hire.
Until this year, Indiana.
No, okay, I'm going to say it. Indiana is not. Indiana is the basketball, what Tennessee is the football, okay? I'm glad you had a ton of success way back in the day when we were all wearing diapers. That doesn't mean you're an awesome program anymore. Just stop it. Stop it. And don't come at me with, like, but the movie Hoosiers, great. I think there are more people nowadays who don't actually know what that movie is that play basketball than you think. So that's all I'm going to say about Indiana. So set Chris Beard aside. If it happens, it happens. I would lean no. But whatever. The other guys you're going to hear, I've seen some articles trying to be like, maybe they'll go get, maybe Calipari has done it. Maybe a Musselman in Arkansas. I'm like, you guys realize that Arkansas is in the SEC and they have plenty of money. And I don't, I mean, maybe, but, and look, he's making the Elite Eight run. So that's a hot name, but we'll see. Maybe Brett Underwood's tired of Illinois. Yeah, okay. They just gave him a ton of money. Let me go through the names I actually think would be interesting. Let me put this one out there. Dana Altman has been at Oregon for a long time. Okay. He wins all the time. He wins in the NCAA tournament. They made the Sweet 16 again. All I'm saying is maybe he's tired of being in Oregon. Maybe he would like to go somewhere else. Texas would make a lot of sense. John Boeheim, or Boeheim, currently out of coaching, had a lot of success at Michigan. Didn't work in the NBA because he's not an NBA coach. He's an older guy. But it's, again, the name that's being floated a lot as well. It's an obvious name for a lot of spots, and he would be able to recruit. Well, he'd be able to coach immediately. At his age, I don't mean to be ageist, but that's a thing to consider. Porter Moser, but I think he'd rather stay in the Chicago area. I think that matters. We can list Grant McCaslin from North Texas again. The name that you're seeing pop up more and more and more, so I'm not going to act like I'm the first person to say it, but we did post it on Twitter fairly early because I do think it's one to keep an eye on, is Royal Ivy. According to Ramona Shelburne, on March 28th, he interviewed for the Texas job on Sunday. Sources told ESPN, Ivy, of course, a key player of the Longhorns Final Four team in 2003. Of course, he's an assistant coach for the Nets, where notable Texas alum Kevin Durant is a player. He has come out in favor of Royal Ivy being named the head coach. Naming a former player who hasn't been a college basketball coach and letting him take over your programs worked out kind of good for Michigan. It doesn't work out everywhere, but if you want to, you know, an option is one. I feel like Ivy is the, if we miss on some of the big names that we want, like with football, he's a really nice kind of backup plan for Texas.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those, you know, you could do a whole lot worse than picking a successful NBA assistant to come over and take over your head coach. Because at least, you know, being a successful assistant, you know, that he's used to working with a lot of really good players. He's, you know, he's used to a lot of the day-to-day running the basketball operations. The one thing you have to worry about is what can he do recruiting-wise, right? Like, that's... But you can also, since 95% of the recruiting, like the actual, you know, day-to-day recruiting is done by the assistants, like that's where I would be the most concerned. Yes, that the head coach is the guy that kind of, you know, comes in and closes the deal, and, you know, you can usually throw the head coach's name around a lot in terms of doing that recruiting. But just like in football, most of the relationships you build with recruits is done by the assistants, especially that, you know, director of recruiting. So it's like, it's one of those things where I would actually be more comfortable bringing in a successful NBA assistant coach who hasn't coached, you know, a head coach at the college level, but has been with a successful program in the NBA, knows what he's doing. And, you know, if he's got that natural charisma that he needs to be able to connect with players, to be able to do what he needs to do to recruit the guys, like I think it can definitely work out. Juwan Howard is, you know, obviously the most recent example of it working out really well. Yes, there are a lot of cases where it hasn't worked out well, but just because it doesn't usually work out does not mean that it would not be the right move for Texas here. And the only reason I think, honestly, like if I'm a Texas fan, I would lean more towards that just because most of the other names that are realistically being thrown out there don't really excite me as someone who I think can get the program turned around that can make Texas take that next step. So if you're going to, you know, if you're worried about, or if you don't see someone that you think can immediately take you to the next level that you need to be at to be super successful at Texas, then you pick a guy kind of like, you know, Iowa State did with Otzelberger. You pick someone that can get the fans excited, that can get people paying, continuing to pay attention to the program, and hopefully he's good enough that they can continue to build and be successful on the court. I'm also going to be really honest. Like, the one thing that worries me the most as a Jayhawk fan is Texas finding a really good coach that can actually coach the players that come into Texas, because they've got a ton of resources and can do a whole lot if they can find a coach that can actually make that team successful consistently.
It's why Beard is number 1, 2, and 3 on their list. Like, he also gets a fan base. He's a darn good coach. He gets players who want to come there. He gets fans excited.
Yeah.
Like, if you got the Texas fan base excited, I think they would show up. But we'll see. Jamie, do we need to do the Mulkey post-game comment, or can we just ignore that?
It's not worth it. It's not worth anyone with a brain cell even acknowledging it, besides the fact that it's disgusting that someone like that can say, the fact that you're a coach for college kids and you would say that we should just quit testing them shows you have little to no concern for anyone in your care. That's all I'm going to say. It's disgusting.
Let's just, if you want to go look up Kim Mulkey's post-game comment, it's all over Twitter. It won't be hard to find. And again, every time
you I'm glad I missed it, it sounds like.
A little bit of sympathy for Baylor and enjoy the women's team. Kim Mulkey opens her mouth. She's one of those people and says something that just makes you go back to hating Baylor. Why do bad or dumb people seem to have... Never mind, I'm not going to go there. Let's wrap up on this since we're going pretty long. The last piece of coaching news, OSU locked up Mike Boynton with a new 7-year contract extension, $21 million, 7 years. After, of course, landing Cade Cunningham, getting to the Big 12 tournament title game, winning their first big... And I understand they got upset by Oregon State. They didn't make the second weekend. They only won one game. But this is OSU's first NCAA tournament win since 2009. This is a very successful season. It's the first year in, 4 years they'd had a winning record in Big 12 play. Take Cade Cunningham aside. This team's continued to develop. Still a young roster. It makes a lot of sense because they had had, Boynton had calls from other programs just gauging interest. He's a guy people are paying attention to. You can dispute how he got Cade Cunningham there or not. Doesn't matter. He got Cade Cunningham to come to Oklahoma State. And at the end of it all, which because it's very rare for these one-off top five pick guys to go to random non-blue blood schools and the school actually not only make the tournament, but win a game and have success. A lot of times, you go look at Washington, Missouri. A lot of times when this happens, Georgia, like last year, 2 years ago, the team doesn't do anything, right? So it's rare to actually see a top five pick go to a non-elite blue blood men's basketball program, have success, the team have success, the team makes the tournament, let alone win a game. So props to Oklahoma State, locking Mike Boynton down with a 7-year contract. I think that was the right move. He was the lowest paid men's basketball coach in the Big 12 and one of the lowest paid Power Five coaches. So I think that was a smart move by Oklahoma State as an Oklahoma State.
Yeah,
fan.
Real quick,
Phillip. It was a damn smart move.
Well, I was going to say, I actually agreed with this on Twitter. I mean, it's one of those things you also have to remember. Yes, he was the lowest paid Big 12 coach. Honestly, I think rightfully so, given the fact that he didn't have any head coaching experience at all anywhere. When he got hired. But, you know, what he's been able to do, I mean, and the only criticisms that you can have of a guy like Mike Boynton in terms of his coaching is, you know, he had some on the court coaching issues, which is completely understandable for a guy who has not been a head coach at the college level prior to coming to Oklahoma State. In the few years he's been at Oklahoma State, he has improved at that dramatically. The fact that he was able to get a guy like Cade Cunningham to even come, yes, you can talk about the whole, hiring a relative as an assistant thing, but that happens all over the place. So it's not like that's, we can really rip on them for doing that. But keeping him after, the whole, ruling coming down that they were going to miss the postseason, even though they ended up getting to go this time, the fact that Cade Cunningham stayed, that one says something about culture that you really want in a program like Oklahoma State. But then, the fact that he has continued to just get better and better and better every year, the way that he coaches, he is a guy that I think is going to be an extremely successful coach no matter where he goes for quite a long time. It's actually been really enjoyable to watch him develop. And the fact that they had all that success this year with both Isaac Likely and Cade Cunningham missing a decent number of games, and they were still super successful in those games. So, you can't tell me, he got, a top five guy and they were able to be super successful because of that. There were quite a few games where they were not available for one reason or another, and they were still able to be successful in those games. So, I thought the coaching job that he did this year, he should have been, hands down Big 12 Coach of the Year this year. He did an absolutely phenomenal job this year. It's a well-deserved extension. 7 years is a long time, but honestly, I think it's deserved because I'm expecting him to get better and better as he goes on. I'm really interested to kind of see how well he's able to develop this Oklahoma State team.
Agreed. That does it for today. We'll be back on Thursday with I don't know who because I haven't decided or figured that out yet because I've been on vacation. To do us a favor, we'll find out who that is on Thursday. So give us a follow on Twitter at 1012 Podcast, TE and the number 12 word podcast. Make sure you're subscribed to the show so you don't miss a single episode. Of course, they go up typically Monday and Thursday at 6 a.m. We should be back to normal next week. Okay. We should be back to normal. That's what we're going to do. We'll be back to normal next week. Don't worry. Make sure you subscribe. Leave us a rating, 5 stars if you don't mind, especially for iTunes listeners. Leave us a review. We would appreciate it. Helps get the word out about the show. Lets us know what we do that you like and don't like. Follow our good friends Andy here at AndyMitts12. That's MITTS12. Follow Jamie at JStyz, JSTEYZ, on the Twitters for all sorts of fun things, especially related to Kansas and women's basketball. Props to and thanks to our sponsors, as always, Lazy Fair Coffee, Homefield Apparel, and MyBookie.ag. Again, hope you guys enjoyed the show. We'll be back on Thursday.